Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them on one team.
The Fire and Water Network proudly presents
JLU Cast.
Hello and welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and we've got a very exciting episode for you this time. Not only are we going to discuss the Season 2 premiere of Justice League Unlimited, but we're talking about the proper DCAU debuts of two long-running DC heroes who have quite a legacy in the history of the company, Wildcat and Black Canary.
And when you're talking about Black Canary, you know we had to activate the JL signal device of the Fire and Water Network All-Star, who hosted and produced two Black Canary podcasts, Flowers and Fishnets and The Power of Fishnets. Please welcome back to the Watchtower, Chris's old Nightcast sparring partner, Mr. Ryan Daly. Woo! Hey, Ryan.
Hey. My legs are so hairy right now. I didn't even shave or wear anything to commemorate this occasion, like fishnets of my own, but no.
Hair poking through the fishnets.
Yeah.
So if you were a fighter in Meta Brawl, Ryan, what would your handle be?
Captain Sardonic.
There you go.
I would just try and, like, I would use passive-aggressive comments and smart-aleck quips as my main offense. I would last about 6 seconds.
You'd have the atomic skull crying in the corner, probably. You know, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, what about you, Cindy? What would yours name be?
Hello, logic class. I already have it.
Okay. That's right.
What does she get you with, like a Charlie horse right in your arm to like kill the nerves in your arm when she punches you in the shoulder?
That's right, right. She just like shuts you down immediately with a frog she frogs you right in the joint, right?
Or I do the patented Ray Atley kill shot.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Which disturbed all y'all because you're like, oh my gosh, you're like, dude.
I don't know what would my handle be.
That's not safe for consumption.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, let's move along then.
Oh, honey, you're blushing.
The reason we brought up Meta Brawl is because we're talking about The Cat and the Canary, with the episode that originally aired February 5th, 2005, just 2 weeks after the season one finale. So I kind of understand why the folks at Warner Brothers Home Video were confused that this was all one season.
Uh-huh.
Because there was basically no gap.
Right, right.
Between it. So, you know, and plus they're just, again, their DVD releases make no sense. But the story was by Stan Berkowitz, teleplay by Robert Goodman, directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, with music by Michael McQuestion. In the cast, we had Marina Baccarin as Black Canary, Ken Schreiner as Green Arrow, Dennis Farina as Wildcat, Virginia Madsen as Roulette, Lex Lang as Thug Leader, and Jamie Alcroft as Larry.
Black Canary discovers her mentor and fellow Justice Leaguer Wildcat is participating in illegal pay-per-view battles called Meta Brawl, run by the manipulative Roulette. Canary enlists the aid of a very eager Green Arrow on a secret mission. She plans to attend Wildcat's next bout against the Atomic Skull, but she needs Oliver Queen's bankroll to pay for the tickets. When the heroes arrive at the locker room, she tries to reason with her old teacher, but he refuses to listen, finding acceptance and fulfillment in fighting and feeling unwanted and put out to pasture by the Justice League.
Green Arrow and Black Canary take the direct approach and enter the arena to stop Wildcat from beating the Atomic Skull to a pulp. Canary confronts him with choosing between his friends and the villains he sparred with, and surprisingly, Wildcat steps aside, leaving his teammates at the mercy of their bloodthirsty foes. Black Canary has a counter offer for Roulette, a battle between her and Wildcat. If she wins, Wildcat walks away from cage fighting forever. If she loses, she leaves him alone. Delighted with the crowd's response, Roulette accepts the deal.
Before the fight begins, Wildcat tries to quit, but Roulette sticks the screws to him, telling him how much he needs to fight and how she'll drop him harder than the league if he refuses. Meanwhile, Black Canary is warming up, and Green Arrow gasses her with one of his trick arrows. He'll be the one fighting Wildcat. The former heavyweight champion refuses at first, pointing out that Arrow is not the fighter that Canary is, but Green Arrow goads him into an attack. He brutally pummels the Emerald Archer repeatedly, but the verbal slings and arrows keep flying. Wildcat goes in for the KO and gets more than he bargained for. Green Arrow has no pulse.
The crowd and Roulette are ecstatic, but Wildcat is horrified and finally declares he's done. Later, as Black Canary confesses how she feels about him, Green Arrow awakens, having put himself in metabolic stasis with his stun arrow. Canary reasons he did it to show Wildcat what it would be like to kill someone. Wildcat walks up and admits it worked. Roulette swears she'll have Wildcat crawling back, but Canary makes sure he'll have no place to go and uses her sonic scream to bring the house down, literally.
Back on the watchtower, Canary takes Wildcat to Joan for counseling, while she and Green Arrow go out for a cup of coffee on her dime.
Yes, yes. So just like the last season, we start off with a Green Arrow starring episode. And in fact, none of the original seven are in this episode except for that brief non-speaking cameo of Jean at the end.
Correct.
So we've moved away from having to have one of the original seven as the anchor here. So I thought that was interesting. And right off the bat, we have Black Canary and Wildcat working together. And she calls him Ted. And he's fighting the Sportsmaster.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like we're knee-deep in DC Comics and the JSA, which, even though the JSA's not mentioned that I know of in this series. But so what do you think of Black Canary's design here, Ryan?
The physical look, I love it. Obviously, like, I know fishnets are kind of like my thing when it comes to, like, these characters and this brand. You don't actually get, like, the netting detail because of the animation style, but the shading on her legs and everything gives you the inclusion. So anyway, I love her look in this guy. I love this sort of like classic retro look. I haven't been a fan of more of her more recent versions that go a little bit more punk rock or give her like the torn fishnets or like the frayed. I see the appeal of that, but to me, it kind of clashes with the character that I've always found more classy and more a little bit more old fashioned in that way of trying to put on a retro look. So in terms of the physical depiction of her, the animation style, the hair, the bustier, the type of, or not bustier, but like the, I don't know, whatever you would call it, but like the strapless shirt. Everything, I just think it really works. It makes her look cool. It's a good signature look that, you know, you wouldn't confuse with any other character.
Right. Yeah. I kind of feel that way too. What about you, Cindy?
Same. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, that they did without the fishnet simply because of animation reasoning. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like Zatanna, she didn't, you know, fishnets, but you know,
you instantly get sex appeal without being overtly either trashy or showing too much skin, or, you know, it's not like pushing it in your face. It's a more reserved, you know, as I keep coming back to, a classy kind of sex appeal.
Well, we'll get in there. There is a little bit of a pushing it a couple places.
I have that in my notes.
Okay. But overall, yeah. And I didn't really notice it before, but I kind of feel like that there's a little bit of the Alex Toth look, especially with her hair here and there, that two-part story Alex Toth did back in Adventure Comics. It made me kind of think of that. So, yeah, I really liked her. I liked the fact that they did the classic look, because they could have very easily went with the more, at the time, the you know, the late 90s, early 2000s Birds of Prey look. They could have went with that costume, which would have been fine. I like that look, but if you're going to...
I mean, arguably the what they called now the Jazzer size outfit, which is much more of a superhero type of look, you know, that seems much more in keeping with, you know, somebody who's palling around with, you know, gods and monsters on a space station. But
yeah, right. Yeah. Black Canary is voiced by Marina Baccarin, as we said, probably best known to many for Firefly and Serenity, but also as Vanessa, the love interest to Ryan Reynolds in the Deadpool franchise. And she voiced the computer Gideon on the CW Flash TV series, and also played Talia on several direct-to-home movie, or, you know, I guess direct-to-home media, I guess is what you call it now. You can't say home video. Direct-to-home media DC animated film. I think, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I think that's good casting, because, you know, throw a blonde wig on her like Black Canary wears, and she'd make a pretty good Black Canary. What do you think?
I like her voice. I I think between the two, I might prefer Gray Delisle from Batman the Brave and the Bold. Maybe just because I keep thinking of her singing in that one episode, yeah. the musical episode.
Death Trap.
I might prefer Gray Delisle, but I mean, I had no problem with Marina Becker. She does great. And yeah, had there been a physical live-action version, she would have been great in that time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Black Canary's introduced, and she takes these guys out fast and hard. I mean, mm-hmm. there's no canary cry till the end either. And she breaks a guy's arm. and it's funny because he told the other guy that it would cost him an arm and a leg if he didn't stop watching the pay-per-view and help them. So
right.
I thought that was funny. So, but she then, when they get away, she unleashes her canary cry and totals that truck. So how powerful do you like your canary cry, Ryan? Is this in league with what we normally see, or how do you feel about this?
So I think I'm on record that the canary cry is my least favorite part of her character. I think it gets used in situations like this where it's like, oh yeah, she kicks the crap out of a dozen guys, but they're getting away in a truck and we need, now she needs to use that one thing. And it's kind of like a little bit of a handicap, just like a thing to just kind of like take it down when she needs it. When I much prefer her just being one of the top five physical fighters in the Justice or in the DC universe. I think that's a more interesting thing. It keeps her kind of in her lane, whereas if she has this one-off superpower, then it's like, oh yeah, she can bring a building down if she needs to, but then it's like, oh, but we can only use it once a day or something like that, and it just puts this kind of arbitrary rule on it. Sometimes they can get creative with it, but I would rather... I prefer my Black Canary as a non-meta human who doesn't have that superpower, or is just hardly ever uses it or something like that. In this episode, it's fine in the times that she does use it, but I'm kind of like, I was way more impressed that with her hands and her feet and just her physical abilities, she whooped the crap out of all of these guys. Like her move where she's like jumping off of the truck, grabbing a guy with her legs, flipping in midair and tossing him. I was in like one fluid motion. I was like, to me, that was a way better action move than, you know, having to scream and knock down a truck with the sonic effects. But
yeah, I agree too. I thought that fight scene was really impressive. It kind of actually reminded me, I'm going back and watching the Netflix Daredevil series right now with Danny, and it kind of reminded me of some of those fight scenes where, you know, mm-hmm. he just wades into a crowd of guys and whoops the tar out of them, bouncing off of everything. That's what you think about it, Cindy?
I think it's one of those things with Black Canary. She is confident in her power, as far as her physical powers, her prowess, and she uses that, but she knew that there wasn't a way to stop that truck without using that. She herself would prefer to use just her physical prowess, not her metahuman abilities.
Yeah, I that's what I kind of got too. Yeah, and I like that. I mean, it's like I'm kind of like with you guys. I don't want Black Canary to drop into a like a drug den and start, you know, with the sonic scream.
Right.
I want her to do what she did here and just whoop the tar out of these guys, yeah, physically, and just at the last minute, you know, if she has to, you know, do the canary cry, which is, yeah. So I like the fact that they up front were more interested in showing how tough she is.
Yes.
Physically, yeah. So this was Canary's debut in animation, but oddly enough, she had appeared in live action about 3 years prior on the Birds of Prey TV series. And there's actually two Black Canaries there, because there's a daughter, and then
right.
there's Lori Loughlin shows up as, which we talked about her. She was on Justice League Unlimited last season in the Booster Gold episode.
Yeah.
You know, nothing, luckily nothing ever happened to Lori Loughlin after that. She went on and did the...
Yeah, nothing.
She did Fuller House and nobody's heard from her since, so...
One of my best friends and I, like, we loved the actress Felicity Huffman, who was the other starlet in that particular scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, we've never talked about the fact that she's a convicted felon, have we? And he's like, nope, and we never will. And it's just like, it's one of these things, like, nope, we have too many precious memories of Dana on Sports Night that we just don't want to talk about this. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say Sports Night, yeah, yeah.
Yep, yep.
I really did like the device, though, that they show the thug watching this on a laptop, and then Roulette announces the winner to a stunned Canary after she's finished mopping these guys up.
Right.
So, yeah, the way the audio plays with, like, the announcing of the fight during, as, while Black Canary's fight, like, that whole back and forth is cut really well.
Yeah, it's very nice. I mean, she's basically doing a play-by-play for Canary's fight while she's doing a play-by-play for Wildcat's fight.
Yeah.
It reminded me of the, going back to Batman the Animated Series with the Fear of Victory episode with Scarecrow when Robin gets dosed accidentally, and there's the whole thing, the climax at the end when they're at the football game and the fear toxin or the antidote gets knocked off of the scaffolding, and you hear like the diegetic sound of the announcer in the football game. It's like, this could be disaster for Gotham, as it's playing for both the fumble on the field,
right,
and the fumble of the antidote, and like Robin has to swing through the air and catch it, and it's like, oh, what a recovery, and that type of thing. The way the announcer is kind of calling both events in real time, I just think it's a really kind of clever use of the audio editing, and it works in this scene too.
Yeah, that's a great callback. I hadn't correlated that, but as soon as you said it, I'm like, oh yeah, they did that. That's early in the animated series too. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the very earliest Robin episodes. So yeah, that's a great callback. Yeah. So then we go to the Watchtower, and Oliver Queen Green Arrow is doing a workout in the training room, I guess, and Black Canary says that he sold his company for $3 billion. So he didn't lose his fortune like he did in the comics here, and I like that. It makes sense how he's able to fund all those trick arrows and all that stuff. But Canary knows who he is, apparently, which is interesting. Of course, with that facial hair and...
Kind of distinctive.
But wasn't he rich again in the comics at this point? Wasn't that part of the Kevin Smith thing? Didn't he get his fortune back somehow or something?
That is a good question. I don't remember. I don't remember the beginning of that arc, but yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like he
probably
did. I seem like he got it. I mean, he inherited it back from somebody else or something. He got rich again somehow, so yeah. But yeah, I thought that was interesting that they acknowledged the fact that Oliver Queen was rich, but now he sold his company off for... Well, he's still rich because he sold it for $3 billion. So,
uh-huh.
Or you know, just, you know, 1.5 after taxes or whatever.
Yeah.
He says, I've noticed you around. To her, which is code for I've been addressing you with my mind for months.
Yeah.
For a whole season, basically.
Yeah, because when we saw Green Arrow introduced last season, Batman's like, you know, you should stick around. And he's like, I don't know, Bats. And he looks over and he sees Black Canary, like, putting her boots on. And he's like, well, maybe I will stick around.
Yeah.
And then the Fearful Symmetry, he's like looking at her while him and Supergirl are in the cafeteria.
Yeah.
And he's like looking at her while he's like talking to her. But this is the first time Black Canary's spoken or had a major part. She was just in the background or, well, in the foreground for Ollie, you know. So now we've got to talk about this. We've said this before, but I think this takes the cake. How did they get away with this line? Because Ollie's punching the punching bag, and she says, you happy punching the bag, or you want to go a few rounds with me?
Entendre.
And then Ollie gives her a shocked look, so it's not like he gets it. I mean, they're acknowledging the fact that what she said is a double entendre.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In the show. It's not just leaving it up to the viewer. They're acknowledging the fact that he gets it. So, and then she says, I am talking about sparring. So she references it too.
Yeah. We're on the same page.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I love
it. And right after that is my favorite part of the episode, when she takes her jacket off. There's just this shot where, you know, the animators had a lot of fun when she's taking her jacket off. There's just like this moment where she pushes her boobs up really high.
They're very buoyant.
Yeah, I mean, you can almost hear the boom, boom sound effect when she does it. I mean, it is very... I know we try not to be too sophomoric nowadays. I mean, even Shag isn't all that irredeemable nowadays. You know, I mean, we've definitely toned it down since the early days of the network. But there's no denying, like you said, Ryan, that the animators were probably just all like, but the whole time they were drawn in, Bruce Timm was like, make them bigger! You know, just, I mean, you know, because... Because let's face it, we know Bruce Timm. likes the female form. I've got a book full of
naked
drawings in the animated style. I know that Bruce Timm likes that. So I, you know, I, yeah, it's definitely a chest out moment. So it's something else. Again, we're in what's ostensibly a kid's cartoon. I know I say that all the time, but it, you know, there's a toy line on the shelves at Walmart and at Toys R Us at the moment that this episode's airing, when Black Canary is like literally, you know, almost breaking the fourth wall with her boobs, you know? I mean,
it's not anything new. You go back and watch some of those episodes of He-Man and Masters of the Universe from the 80s. There's, like, weird butt shots of Teela from time to time and other kind of moments like this. It's like, every now and then, it's like, oh, yeah.
Yep. Like, and who worked on Masters of the Universe as well? Bruce Timm. Paul Dini, Bruce Timm.
Paul Dini, I think, he wrote a couple.
He wrote a lot of episodes, So, yeah, they all worked. He wrote, Bruce Timm drew the mini comics, and, but Nolly even says that'd be nice, too. So they keep it going. I mean, they just, it'd be nice as well, in addition to what we were kind of talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
When we do the comic connections and everything, but it is established this Dinah and Ali, even though this is their first time seeing them in the cartoon, this is an established couple. They have long been a very sexual couple and very open about that, going back to the 70s when they were like first dating and everything. So it's, yeah, that's just, if you're going to have these two in a room, they're going to flirt like this, and it's going to be, yeah, you got to, If you're not keeping up with this, then you're not really doing justice to the characters.
Right. I mean, you could cut the tension with an arrow, you know? I mean,
well, it's like you and me flirting.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Hopefully I'm not as, you know, you make better chili than I do, so you're the Ollie in that equation. But, you know. then they, you know, they spar, and Ollie gets on top of her with her hands behind her back. And you just kind of help. She flips her hair over. And, I mean, are we watching Adult Swim? I mean, is that what we're doing? So we find out, though, he says, like, he's like, well, if you can get out of this hold, you know, I'll, you know, she's like, you know, she got, you know, I could use your help. Well, if you get out of this hold, I'll help you or whatever. And then the next scene, she just knocks him clear across the room. We don't see what she does, but...
I mean, oh, she scammed him. She hustled him.
Yeah.
And that saved the moment. That really saved the scene, because from her introduction, we see how great she is. And then once she starts sparring with Ali, like, she looks terrible. Like, her first throw, and he's like, he's barely even trying when he, like, stops her. He's like, you're telegraphing your punches. And I'm, like, the first time I'm watching this, I'm like, okay, I call BS. I was like, she is not that bad. Like, she doesn't need Green Arrow to train her on how to throw a punch or throw a kick. And then I'm like, she's gotta be luring him into a trap.
Oh,
like,
yeah, she was a hustle.
She's playing with him. Yeah. So they confirm it when she's enticing him. She's like, all right, you do me a favor if I can get out of this. He's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then, boom, she throws him across the room.
I wonder exactly, like, I like that they don't show what she did.
Yeah.
I mean, you just see the next scene is Ollie flying across into the, like, the rack of the weights over by the wall. You know, it's really nice, yeah. So then they, they transport down, and they're on, Canary's got her motorcycle, which is good. You know, Black Canary's been riding a motorcycle, I guess, since the 40s, I guess, so makes sense. And Ollie's holding onto the seat, but she says, you can hold on to me if you want. Hey, at least he got permission before he got handsy.
So.
And then she explains she's worried about Wildcat, and he lets go saying, oh, because he thinks there's something with her and Ted. So I like that bit. He's like, oh. And he puts his hands back on the back of the seat. It's like, oh, crap. You know, he's like, okay, I'm the third wheel now. Yeah. You know, this motorcycle's got three wheels now. Then we meet Roulette properly. She was a fairly new character at the time, having only debuted in 2001 in JSA Secret Files number 2, created by Jeff Johns and Derek Acoin. She's voiced here by Virginia Madsen, probably best known for the movie Sideways, both the original and the reboot of The Candyman, which I haven't seen the reboot, but she's apparently in both the films, so I didn't realize that. And she recently appeared in the Swamp Thing TV series And she voiced Hippolyta in the 2009 Wonder Woman animated movie.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's a good movie, that Wonder Woman movie. So, what are your guys' thoughts on Roulette in general, the character? Ryan?
I like her. I like her as sort of like, you know, one of these like kind of masterminds who kind of like runs her own little criminal enterprise. This is sort of like around like the same time they were making the Penguin, you know, the sort of the kind of kingpin of Gotham, as he sort of had like a legitimate face as the proprietor of this Iceberg Lounge. I like Roulette having this function, kind of like the calculator, where she can be a sort of organizer and an infiltrator that has an air of legitimacy and an air of just sort of natural management, where her threat, the danger of her comes more from the infrastructure that she has built around her than any kind of like a real physical thing about her that we at least we see in this episode. And it's just kind of, it's a different type of villain that certainly in the show by this point we haven't really seen. Yeah. And kind of makes like, yeah, the way to beat her, it's not like putting her in jail or, you know, like hitting her or like shooting her with a blast or anything like that. Like, that's not how you combat a villain like this. And the threat that she poses, the danger that she has in the case of Wildcat is more, well, kind of getting into this episode and the major theme that I found, which was enabling his addiction and feeding it for her own nefarious purposes.
Yes, yes. Would you say any thoughts on her, Cindy?
It's one of those cases that her threat is how she works on the minds of these guys, not necessarily, you know, not her physicality. It's how, hey, I got something you want. Come here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, she's. I thought they handled her really well, and Virginia Madsen's really great in the role. And I mean, she looks straight up like the comic design, even with the. They even went with the big tech dragon tattoo on her,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
all
accent
across her back and her shoulder, which is kind of amazing that they bothered to animate that. But
right, and down her leg.
Down her leg and down the small of her back and all that. Yeah, so. Yeah, she. I mean, she straight up just stepped right out of the comic at the time. And I think. I didn't look this up, but wasn't she on Smallville? I think she
possibly
was.
Possibly.
Yeah, I don't know. They did so many weird things later in Smallville.
Yeah.
I can't. Yeah. But I think she was. I don't know if she was. Surely she showed up in the CW first at some point, and I probably just forgot. But anyway, more importantly, we're introduced to Wildcat here, you know, is in full form. Wildcat is voiced by Dennis Farina, who usually played a tough guy or a cop. And he actually was a policeman on the Chicago PD for 18 years before he got into acting.
Huh.
He starred in the
one of my favorite actors. One of my favorite actors.
Oh yeah,
cool. Yeah, I loved him for a long time, and like I would watch him in like you know, cop shows and like some of those smaller parts. He ended up doing Law and Order for a couple of years, but like where my heart really went for him was the movie Get Shorty with John Travolta and Danny DeVito. Like, his gangster character in that is hilarious. I love him so much in that movie. He's got, like, the best moment. He's coming out of an airport or out of a hotel or something and going, and he's got a car waiting for him. And he could walk, like, the car's, like, right there in front, and he could walk right to the door. But he walks 5 steps in front of the car, snaps his fingers, and goes, "Come here." And the driver has to pull the car up 5 feet. And it's like, what? Just walk to the door. You're like, you don't even have to break your stride. But no, he just walks one way, and he's like, "Come here." And the car has to move for him.
Now that's power. That's power.
That's
right?
Power. That's power, yeah.
I remember him.
Just like, in terms of like, whenever I hear, like, he's what makes me think of Andrea Romano's quote when she talked about casting actors with a voice with character.
Yeah,
and that's how like she approached her job, and like, yeah, you just he's got one of those voices that just got years and years and miles of tough road behind it, and yeah, of course that sounds like Ted Grant. Yeah,
yeah, I remembered watching that crime story show that he was on in the 80s. That was kind of like one of the first things he was big on, and I liked that show. It wasn't on very long, but I was like really young, but for some reason that show was like set in the 60s. It was like real. It was real
gritty.
Yeah, it was gritty for the time. Yeah, I really like that. I really like that show. So yeah, he's a great. You're right. He is a great voice for Wildcat. I mean, he starts talking. You're like, oh yeah, that's what Wildcat would sound like. You know. I mean, I like R. Lee Emery as Wildcat on The Brave and the Bold, but that's a more of a cartoony approach for Wildcat. This works here. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. Wildcat says he's out, but it doesn't take much for Roulette to manipulate him to stay. As you guys said, she's very, very good at that. So what do you guys think about Wildcat going down this pretty dark path here?
I know, when he steps aside.
Oh, I know that. Yeah. But I mean, even now, I mean, he's, you know, he's a justice leader.
I mean, when they're on the motorcycle, Dinah says she thinks he's having kind of a midlife crisis, and it has to do with like not knowing his place in the league. And from here, we're kind of like, okay, that'd be a little bit interesting where this goes. And as the episode progresses, and it was something that I mean, I've seen this episode before a couple of times, but I never really thought about it until for the sake of this podcast, I kind of had to scrutinize it. And then it like hit me like smacked me upside the head. I was like, oh, they're telling a story about addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like it could have been about a drug addict or alcohol abuse or gambling addiction or any kind of whatever. But like, I was like, Wildcat is a junkie. He's a fighting junkie. He can't give it up. And they go through a lot of the beats in this that like, where's like, he tries to quit and it's just like only has to sweet talk a little bit to get them to come back. And when the friends try and help, they say, no, we're here to get you out of there. Nope, that's not going to work. They can't like, and we'll play up this theme, and I'll go through as we get to the end of the episode when we go through more of the plot. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. Like this could have been about Ted Grant dealing with alcoholism or drugs or any other kind of vice, but in this one they're using his fighting as a metaphor for addiction. And for a kid's cartoon, that could be interesting if, you know, if the kids are savvy enough to get it and play up on it. And yeah,
I mean it is, I mean, that's this whole episode, like you said, it's definitely, you know, it's they're definitely playing into that. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, the characters of Green Arrow and Black Canary have had some history with helping people with addiction, and that would be mm-hmm. Speedy and his heroin uh-huh. addiction. So, mm-hmm. Well, Dinah more than Ollie, really, but I thought that
right. Historically in the comics, Ollie wasn't the best at handling people with addiction,
no.
He actually knows how to deal with it this time in the episode. He gets his redemption here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. So we get the scene where, you know, they go hit up a guy to get the tickets to the Meta Brawl, and Ollie's put out because now he thinks Canary just wanted him because she knows he's rich
uh-huh.
and he can pay their way in there. And she says, well, you know, I thought I could trust you. So I thought that was kind of interesting because, yeah, I think she does think she can trust Ollie, but there's probably a little bit there that she's like, okay, I need some money.
Oh, there's a bit of mercenary there.
Yeah, yeah. So is Dinah, or they never call her Dinah, we'll say that. Is Black Canary a natural blonde in the DCAU? I mean, wouldn't it made more sense for her to go undercover as a brunette, you know, when they go into Meta Brawl? I mean, you know, it's kind of... Or maybe she just bleaches her hair like in the Birds of Prey era. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, by that time, by the time like Chuck Dixon got a hold of her, they dropped the whole natural brunette, or it didn't come up. She wasn't wearing a wig anymore. She was either naturally blonde or she like colored her hair constantly, and they didn't have to deal with her having like two different looks depending on whether she was a civilian or in the superhero getup. But
yeah, but it's kind of,
I kind of miss that, but it's fine for the sake of the cartoon. That's like, that's one of those details where the character is only gonna show up 3 times a year, maybe, if you're lucky. It's not that big a deal.
No, they did. I mean, I didn't even think about it till this time. That's like, oh well, she's just walking around basically Black Canary in a different clothes, but you know, that's okay. Mm-hmm.
So does Clark Kent.
So, but, he's got glasses. He stoops over. Christopher Reeve proved it works. So
does Wonder,
I mean, she had a domino mask for like the first two issues. She appeared
right.
in the mask.
Right, yeah. That's right. Yeah, we established that she calls Green Arrow Ollie and Wildcat Ted, but no one ever calls her Dinah in this episode, which I thought was interesting. So, at Meta Brawl, we see Bloodsport fighting the Electrocutioner. Bloodsport is a character that will later be played by Idris Elba in the Suicide Squad film.
Yeah.
He just looks a lot different, but that's him. We also see Evil Star and Tracer of the Extremists. walking behind Ollie and Canary, or extremists, I guess I should say. Extremists sounds like they got stuff hanging out. But extremists, they walk behind Ollie and Black Canary. And then Canary confronts Ted, and he tells her he's tired of being stuck on the spaceship babysitting. He then digs in on people with powers with, I don't even have a supersonic bird call. So right. I was like, oh, that's... That's kind of a low blow. So
he's making himself the victim. He's making everybody else the problem, which right. is
typical
addict speak. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I like the design of Ted. He looks like he's got cauliflower ears. He looks like his nose has been broken. He's rough. He's rough looking. The Wildcat design's cool. It's very minimalistic. But, you know, Wildcat is very minimalistic. I mean, he's in a black bodysuit with some fur, you know. But, I mean, it's a straight adaptation of the comic look. But I like how they designed him, in both in with the mask and without. So, of course, Ollie gets the wrong idea. He walks out, but Canary tells him that Ted is like a father figure to her and trained her and other heroes. So, really, this is the first time an older generation of heroes... of superheroes, anyway, was really hinted at in this continuity.
Yeah.
Before we kind of assumed, I mean, I guess Batman showed up first, then Superman, based on how we met
right.
the DCAU, you know, which is kind of reverse of a lot of things. So, was there a Justice Society or a Justice Society type group in this world? I don't think it's ever quite mentioned by name. I mean... We know there was the Justice Guild in the comic books Green Lantern read, but and then they existed on that, you know, in that world they went to, but they there's not, you know, it's kind of weird to think there was a JSA that they wouldn't have, that wouldn't have come up in the conversation at that point. So, I mean, this is very nerdy. I mean, you know, it's they don't have to get into that, but it's, you know, we do see classic characters like Dr. Midnight and Johnny Thunder in the Justice League as well. And right. they're the Golden Age looking versions of them.
Uh-huh.
So it's just kind of interesting to think, well, now what does this mean for the timeline of the DCAU? What, how long have these guys been active? You know?
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's just, you know, we could go down that nerd rabbit hole, but you know, I don't think they probably thought it out all that well. They were just like, yeah, they've been older heroes.
Yeah.
Now there have, so that's fine. Then there's another moment when they change in the locker room, and she says, "Right here will do." And he kind of looks around as she's taking her jacket off, and she said, "You dropped something." Eyes front, Ollie.
You can't blame a man for trying.
Yeah, that's
you know,
that's right. I mean, you know.
You know, my biggest problem with this episode is that actually Ollie is too good. Ollie has too much integrity. He's too noble. And, like, having read so many of the comics, especially the Bronze Age comics of the two of these characters, I really grew to dislike them together. Like, you know, like as much as they are, like, the signature couple, I read so many comics where he just... Because of the time in which they were written and the guys writing them, just like Ollie always came off as so patronizing to me. And he's supposed to be this bleeding heart liberal, but when it came to her, he was always just like condescending and like keeping her down and like everything, like couldn't, and always had to come to her rescue because even though she was a tough girl, she always had to be put in danger. And it drove me crazy, the two of them. So it makes me think, like, whenever they're together, I'm always looking for the worst in Green Arrow.
Right.
And yeah. This cartoon just showed the best of him. And I'm like, damn it. Like, I'm waiting for Ollie to be the punching bag in this episode for me because I want to champion Dinah and Ted and everybody else. But it's like, no, Ollie is the hero of this particular episode. He's the one person who is not in it for himself, doesn't have his own agenda,
mm-hmm.
and sees what's best for everybody by the end of it.
Well, that's interesting. I'll pose a question to you then later as we get along here. But yeah, that I know you're not really a fan, and I can of the couple, and I can certainly see why. I think there's It's one of those cases where they just keep getting back together, but it's like, should they? Probably not, you know. So, it's like a couple, you know, in real life. It's like, oh, come on, guys. Can you just move on? You know, just stop it. So, more nerd stuff. We see the Helgramite and Amygdala. As Atomic Skull walks into the ring, Amygdala looks a little weird, but, you know, that's that most probably famous for being one of the villains in Nightfall. They almost said Nightcast. In Nightfall that Batman has to go through when Arkham's, you know, Bane releases everybody in Arkham. So, so we get the big fight as, you know, Wildcat's fighting Atomic Skull. But he's, like, punching him directly in the head. Wouldn't he get radiation burns?
I mean, don't know.
I think he's called the Atomic Skull, and his head is, like, engulfed in green flames. So, I mean, just, yeah.
I think the ace wrap he puts around his wrist and his fist that they put on underneath the boxing gloves, I think that's enough to stop the radiation.
Okay.
Maybe it's the same gauze they use on Negative Man.
There you go, yeah.
You can hear and see bones cracking as Wildcat just keeps pummeling him. I mean, he really seems to be enjoying the excessive amount of beating he's giving the Atomic Skull, too. So do you guys think if Green Arrow hadn't shot his handcuff arrow and cuffed him to the cage, do you think he would have killed him?
I don't know.
I mean, he might have killed somebody for real, yeah. You know, I mean, if he just kept, you know. And he later says he had it coming, you know. He said earlier he's got Atomic Skull's got it coming. So, yeah. Wow. Green Arrow and Black Canary make a nice dramatic entrance, but Canary seems a bit surprised when Ollie grabs her for the swing in. I thought that, you know.
I'm like, I can get there on my own, dude.
Calm down, Errol Flynn, you know, basically. We get the rope arrow, the bola arrow, the electric arrow, and the net arrow, which temporarily stops the other fighters from interfering as Green Arrow and Black Canary take out the security guards. The other villains regroup and come at them. And I think it's funny because Green Arrow says, "Think we can take them?" She's like, "No." I love the way she says it. She's just like, "No, what are you, stupid?" You know? Wildcat halts them and asks Black Canary what she's doing. She says if they have to take the place apart to get him to quit, so be it. She asks him to pick a side, and like you guys pointed out, he just steps out of the way.
I know. And even does this hand thing, like, here you go.
Yeah. Every time I watch this, I'm still shocked by this. What do you guys think of this?
I mean, he feels like she's... You know, she's trying to take away what he loves, what he needs. Like, she's his enemy at this point. He's kind of like he's fed up. He's, you know, he thinks she needs to learn her lesson and to mind her own business, to stay out of his thing. And yeah, he's caught up. He's an addiction. He's an addict at this point. He's a junkie, and it's she's trying to take away his fix.
Yeah, yeah. What about you?
Same. I mean, that's my exact read on it too. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of. I mean, when you go back and watch it, though, you're like, and at no point. I mean, I'm maybe getting ahead of ourselves. Like, at no point does Wildcat step up.
No.
To help him. I mean, he really doesn't. You're expecting to be like, oh, I can't let to see these kids get, you know, these guys tear these kids apart. Nope. Green Arrow suggests that she uses her sonic scream, but she says, I can't. At this range, it would kill them. So, as we said, the canary cry here is apparently a very... It seems like it's a very powerful... power... I'm using the same word again, but it's very... It doesn't seem like she has a precise control on it here. Mm-hmm. It's like if she unleashes that... Something's getting wrecked.
Yeah.
You know, she can't just, like, focus it and, like, you know, shatter, like, she couldn't shatter a champagne glass and not take out all the windows in a room, you know, basically.
Right.
It's like a grenade. You can't, it's like, okay, this is just a little grenade.
Right.
A little bit.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Right. So then Canary pitches that she and Wildcat fight. If she wins, Roulette bans Wildcat from cage fighting. If Wildcat wins, then Black Canary won't bother him again. And Wildcat refuses, But Roulette knows she's got a winner. She announced it as two good guys fighting. And I like how she says, and one of them is her. And they get this nice upshot of Black Canary standing there.
Yeah.
And the crowd wolf whistles and the Monopoly guy loses his monocle.
Yeah. And his date's just like, rrr.
Yeah. She gives him, his cheeks go red and he's like, oh, you know, and she's all like, rrr, you know. But as you guys pointed out, Roulette really knows how to wind Ted up. He says he won't do it because he only fights those who have it coming. But she calls BS and tells him how much he enjoys just fighting and just beating the crap out of people. And she tells him not to go easy on Black Canary or she'll put him out to pasture as quickly as the league.
Oof.
Oy, yeah, wow. So, again, we're dealing with this, you know, addiction storyline, as you pointed out, Ryan, in a kid's cartoon. So, okay, now here's the part, Ryan. Now, you said that about, you know, Ollie wasn't too much of a prick in this episode, but, and I mean, he did it for good reasons, but he does knock Dinah out.
But the simple fact is, he had sparred with her. He knew that she could kick his ass. What makes him think that he's a better partner to go against Wildcat than her?
Well, he doesn't.
He knew he wasn't. So here's the thing. This is at the crux of it, which is, I think it's a little bit ironic coming from Green Arrow, based on what we know of him from the comics and his reaction to Speedy. If we're playing out this analogy of Ted being an addict, you can't trick an addict into quitting. You can't beat an addict into quitting. It's not like he could just... He knew that Dinah could beat Ted Grant. He knew that Dinah would win, or that Black Canary could win that fight. But that's not going to stop what is in Wildcat's heart if he loses. This is really all that he is wants to do and all he is living for now, he's going to find another outlet for it, and it might be worse or something like that. You also can't just take away like what an addict has and just expect there to be no consequences. An addict has to bottom out. They have to, what they say, they have to hit rock bottom, and then that's when they come to terms with it, and that's when they're able to face their problems. Ollie knew the only way to get Wildcat to stop was for him to go so far over the line that he's horrified at his own actions. And that meant he had to kill somebody in the ring. He had to kill an innocent person, somebody who did not believe, who did not belong there, unlike, you know, Atomic Skull or whatever. And he knew that that wasn't going to be Canary because she could win. But, and Ollie, maybe if Ollie was serious about it, Ollie could have beat him too, but he didn't go in there trying to win. He was just goading him into punch after punch after punch until it looked good enough, and then he could stun himself.
Ollie knew you got to kind of stop and think about it, because like he, and give him the benefit of the doubt that he knew that, like you said, that even if she did beat him, that she thought that she could beat him and make him quit, but he would find another way to get into this. Mm-hmm. He would go fight probably an even seedier cage match somewhere else, or in a basement somewhere, or in a parking garage, or like Fight Club or something. You know, I mean, he'd be doing something like that.
And
somewhere.
And he would hate Wildcat would hate Canary for the rest of their lives. And if there was any kind of affection or love between them, whatever it was, Ollie recognizes that, and he's like, that's something that should be preserved too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ollie didn't care if Ted hated him for the rest of his life.
But. Yeah, because he doesn't know him, right? So he doesn't really care. Yeah, yeah. So, okay, I had originally, you know, you've convinced me that Ollie, I thought this kind of tracked with his somewhat chauvinistic portrayal sometime in the comics, and I guess you could kind of say it still does, because he doesn't talk this over with her. He doesn't, I mean, he doesn't even bother to try to say, hey, what if we did this? He just mm-hmm. does it to her, you know, knocks her out without her consent. And, mm-hmm. and you know, so, I mean, yeah, he's kind of being, you know, which she points out later, he's being stupid and pigheaded and
sure, yeah,
overly
yeah.
macho and, you know, to a point. But yeah, but he's doing it for the right reasons. So, yeah. I do like the fact that, you know, the way he gets Ted to take the first swing, he says, I know what it is. Maybe you'd rather fight a woman, which is, you know, just to an old school guy like Ted, that's, you know, a way to push his buttons, you know.
I don't even have any powers, and you can't.
Yeah. Oh man, and the beating is brutal. I mean, I'm really surprised they got away with this too, because I know during the Fox years of Batman the Animated Series, you couldn't show. Well, you weren't supposed to show too much of anything that a kid could replicate on another kid. You know, there's notes like in like the Batman animated book by Paul Dini and Chip Kidd. Like Robin can't or Bane can't pick up Robin by his head. You know, because a bigger kid could do that to a smaller kid. Mm. Yeah. So I mean, you know, but here, I mean, they're literally just beating the stuffing out of each other. Well, I mean, not each other. Wildcat's beating the stuffing out of Green Arrow.
They're pretty one sided.
His face looks like hamburger by the end of this. Yeah. So. And then Wildcat seemingly kills him. We get that big, like you said, he says, I don't have any powers, and you still can't knock me out. And he does this big, you know, uppercut punch that sends Green Arrow, like, spiraling across the arena. And he seemingly kills him. I mean, you know, obviously Green Arrow's not dead. I mean, they're not going to kill him, you know, on here. But just the idea that he thinks he killed him.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm we knock the sound out. The whole thing goes silent. You just see the crowd reaction, like, in stunned horror before they kind of... Before then, they're like, oh, yeah, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just watched him kill a guy. All right. Yeah. It's just...
And notice, Dinah was struggling to get past the security guards until that moment. Then she's like, get the hell out of my way.
Yeah.
And I like that the first thing she does is slug Wildcat.
Yeah. Yes, she does. She just walks up and is like, what did you do? And like punches him. Yeah. But he, you know, he tells her that he's, you know, finally out. Wildcat, you know, tells Roulette, I'm fine. You know, this is it. I'm over. It's over. And walks away. And I like how they show the, you know, the Black Canary over Green Arrow's body with all the crowd there. And then it just fades, and, like, now all the crowd's gone, but she's still over top of him. So
I thought it was kind of weird. Like, did, like, anybody come up and say, like, should we move the body, or are you going to take care of that? Like, everybody just files out and leaves. It's like there's what they think is a dead body in the middle of it. Like,
yeah.
Like, if there's a fight the next night, is Roulette have any kind of staff to take care of that? Or I'm assuming Dinah was, like, get the hell away from us.
Yeah, I guess that's what it was. People probably walked up and she was like, don't touch him, you know, that type thing. But it is, you would think that Roulette would know, okay, we can't have any bodies, you know, no bodies. We got to dump this body somewhere. And I'm sure Roulette knows a good place to dump a body that nobody ever finds. So, yeah, I do like the Black Canary says, you know, that was an incredibly stupid thing to do, not to mention arrogant, pig-headed, macho, and very, very sweet. But so she does point out that he's arrogant, pig-headed, and macho. Mm-hmm. So, which is kind of, I mean, like you said, Ryan, he's not the dick that Ollie often is, but that does sum up their relationship. Arrogant, pig-headed, macho, but very, very sweet. His kind of attitude toward Dinah, you know, so. Don't look at me like that. I ain't that. She like said he's looking at me like, yeah, okay, all right.
I love you.
Nice. So my question is, you know, Green Arrow says, you know, it was a stun arrow, put him in metabolic stasis. So Green Arrow has a stun arrow that makes it look like you're dead for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Why would you have that? Maybe just set it up to 11. You know, maybe just set his stun arrow up to the top setting or
well,
something.
Well, that's the only thing that I have a problem with in this, because he says it stuns you for a few minutes.
Yeah.
However, when we look, the whole crowd is gone from the arena.
Yeah.
That wouldn't happen a few minutes. That's the logic that I have problem with.
Well, maybe nobody checked his pulse again, you know, and they didn't notice that he was breathing until he said something. I don't know. That's a good point, though. Yeah.
I mean, you know. Yeah. That's the sticking point.
I'm sure everybody on here has been to an arena, to a concert or a sporting event or something. It's not that easy to get out of an arena, especially one that's like a hidden arena that they didn't even know where it was. Mm. I mean, I'm sure there's like, it's hard.
I also think if you're somebody in Green Arrow's line of business, you don't want to be able to stun yourself into a death-like state for too long.
Yeah.
Because a lot could happen when you have no control of your body.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, you know, that was kind of, I mean, you know, thinking it through, I mean, what if he must have had a lot of faith in Black Canary, because, you know, well, she'll make sure nothing else happens to me while I'm, you know, knocked
out.
Out
of it, yeah.
Now, my one question is, at what point did he stun himself? And I mean, it must have been when Wildcat punched him or when he landed.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, I mean, I was looking to see if they showed, like, his hand behind his back or
something. Me too.
And he didn't. So I was like, did he have it tucked in his belt? Because he took his quiver off.
Or did he have it on a timer when it would stun him and hope that it lined up with a, you know, a punch?
Yeah, I don't know where he stunned himself, but it just, you know, it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty good size thing that he shows. He's got it in his hand and shows it, you know, but it's like, it's one of those, you know, don't think about it too hard.
And it hurts my brain that it,
Yeah. So he did this so Wildcat would see what it was like to kill someone, as we pointed out. And I love Dennis Farina's understated answer. It worked. You know, he doesn't, it's very low. You know, he walks up, helps him up, and just, I love how he says that. He's a great actor, obviously. And I think I had forgotten that he died pretty young. He died like when he was 69, you know, a few years after.
Yeah,
this.
A few years ago.
Yeah, so it was, That's a shame.
Yeah, now that we're in our 40s, 69 seems really
good. I know. It's. I like that Black Canary brings the house down, but I wish Wildcat had definitively told Roulette once and for all that he was done with her. He never, you know, I mean, he says, hey, you know, I'm out and this, that. But that's part of the realism of this episode, that he didn't like turn on a dime and like, I'll never do this again, you know, or anything like that. I mean, it, you know, and that's one reason why the end scene with, you know, he says, you know, I'm through, and she's like, well, you know, that's great, but, you know, we need to make sure that's gonna happen. So she takes him to Jean, the Martian counselor.
Which is like the next step is basically, now that he's bottomed out, he needs to go to AA or recovery or rehab or something, and that's what the sessions with John are going to be. And I love his line then when he tells her, he's like, believe me, fighting is nowhere near as tough as this is going to be.
Yeah. Again, it's a great way to end this, and kudos to them for not, you know, they probably couldn't get away with drug addiction or alcoholism on this show, but they found a way to do a storyline about addiction that actually, in the context of a man in a cat costume fighting a guy dressed like Robin Hood, they managed to make it, as you know, put some realism in it. They grounded it as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And the fact that his counselor is a shape-shifting Martian that can read minds. But, you know, then they're on a floating space station. But, you know, it's still, it, within the context of this reality that the DCAU is, this is really well done in a very mature subject that's handled really well.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a nice bit at the end where Green Arrow tells Black Canary she's paying for their coffee, so just assuring she's not after his money.
Yeah.
So. I like that. So you guys want to jump in our superlatives here?
Sure.
Yeah.
Power action feature.
Okay, so what did you have for power action feature, Ryan?
Again, like, kind of being of two minds of this, of really wanting to vote for Black Canary for most of these things, but having to go with Green Arrow. I wanted to have Black Canary's whole intro of just taking out the gang by herself, but I mean, in terms of it's the emotional and physical climax of the episode. It's Ollie letting himself get beaten to death.
That's what I go with too. That's what I was going to say too.
Okay.
Because sometimes the power is in taking it, not dishing it out.
Mm.
Right. Okay. It's knowing when losing is the, you know, the better part of valor.
Yeah. Okay, well, I will say I don't disagree with you guys, but I gave it to Black Canary for her intro. Okay. Her opening battle fight scene, just because it established that she was such a badass right off the bat, you know. So
rotating chairperson.
So who'd you have for rotating chairperson, Ryan?
Again, I wanted to vote for Black Canary, but Green Arrow, he paid $2,000 to get his ass kicked. Yeah. to let an old man kick his ass. Just and again, like Dinah brings him in on this thing, and he's like, okay, I'll do this favor. And he thinks that Dinah might be having an affair or in love with Wildcat. He kind of gets that wrong when she explains, no, he's like a father to me. But all that, like, Ollie just goes along because somebody is asking him for a favor, and he needs to do the right thing. And he's also the one person, like, he's able to see, it's like, you're too emotionally connected to this thing that you don't know how to approach this guy. Let me take care of this. And he does in the very Green Arrow fashion of overstepping it and kind of patronizingly say, girl, you don't know what you're doing. I will handle this because I know better than you. And that's when he has to dose her, knock her out.
Yeah.
But then to get in it, it's like he knows how to make Ted stop doing what he's doing. So I had to go with Green Arrow as much as I hated it.
Well, what about you, Cindy?
Ryan's in my brain.
Okay. All right. Well, again, I went back to Black Canary. So I said, you know, I don't disagree with what you said. But I do like, you know, it was her plan to save her friend, and she knew it was going to take more than just brute strength. I mean, yes, I mean, Green Arrow come up with
no,
that.
No, she really didn't.
Yeah, well, but she did, because she knew that he was going to have the counseling from Jean.
But not till afterwards. She went into that thinking, I'm going to pull him out using my fighting skills. The part of using the counseling came after.
Yeah, but I kind of got...
She didn't want the League to know about this.
Well, that's
like,
true.
That was the whole thing. It was trying to keep the secret to protect Ted.
Uh-huh. That's true. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, you guys are right. You've convinced me. You're right. I'll give it to Green Arrow. Okay. You're right. Yeah. Which, you know... Now that we're, you know, now, okay, they kept Ted on the League, just for future reference. They didn't kick Wildcat off the League for this, but they eventually kicked the Huntress out for, I think, something that's less than this, if I remember right. We'll have to watch and see again, but they kick her out, don't even try to give her any counseling or anything, so, but.
Yeah.
That's just institutional misogyny.
Yeah, there you go.
I disagree, though, because what they kicked her out for was she was going to kill him.
Well, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it.
Yeah, you're right. She was going to. Yeah, you're right. You're right. The Mandagore guy. Yeah, you're right. But okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I just say that because I don't remember how the episode ends.
Oh, okay.
I know
what episode you're talking about, but I'm like, what happened to Mama?
That's the next episode with Green Arrow and Black Canary. So
yeah. We've got an update one.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And I think we've got Siskoid down for that one, so
that'll be good.
Yeah, he's joining us for that one.
Justice League Communicator.
So for Justice League Communicator, what did you have, Ryan?
It was Wildcat's line at the very end when he says, "Believe me, fighting is nowhere near as tough as this is going to be." Just showcasing that the road to recovery, going into rehab, starting that process of rebuilding yourself as a whole person. Especially after you've bottomed out, after you've betrayed your friends, betrayed what you believe in yourself, all of that stuff. Like that is one of the hardest parts for any addiction is, you know, facing that and like going through the process of admitting your own weaknesses and trying to come out the next side. So
I'm sorry for what I put you through, but don't worry. Seeing a dead body from my hands, it knocked me back to my senses.
I believe you. But I'd like some assurance it's gonna stick.
Excuse me?
Things like this, sometimes you can't stop all by yourself, no matter how much you want to.
Believe me, fighting's nowhere near as tough as this is gonna be.
Well said. What about you?
I would say, you know, when Green Arrow's laying there and Black Canary's over him and she's like, you wanted him to see what it felt like to kill somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and the way she says it, like, oh gosh, this is why you did it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's a good one.
You know, that was an incredibly stupid thing to do. Not to mention arrogant, pig-headed, macho, and very, very sweet. Sorry.
I'm not. It's a stunner. Puts you in metabolic stasis for a few minutes.
You wanted him to see what it would feel like to kill someone.
Think it worked?
worked.
I'm gonna. You guys are being very profound. I'm going with you. Happy punching the bag, or you want to go a few rounds with me? Just the audacity of that line. I just could not pick that. I cannot believe they said that.
Got away with it.
It just kept referencing it. They didn't just let it go. Like, wait, did they say that? No, they tripled down on it. They tripled that, not doubled. Tripled down on it, referencing. They both referenced the fact we're talking about this, right? You're meaning we're going to screw, but you actually say,
"Oh, Chris,"
you know, it's like, I mean, it's just like, I mean, just, oh man, yeah. So sorry, but yeah, you guys are better, really. But I couldn't get past it. So,
comic connections.
For the comic connections, anything that jump out at you, Ryan?
I mean, obviously, there's the whole Dinah and Ollie romance. I mean, that's, as we said, they are one of, like, the most long-standing established couples in DC Comics history. We haven't seen that on the show up until now, but just the fact that they're flirting, they're going out on maybe a proper date for coffee after this, you know, is kind of, like, setting up that their whole continued relationship. And then, but also the other relationship in this, which is Dinah and Ted, and, like, this idea, which is a post-crisis revisionist idea, especially once they establish the two Dinahs, that there was a JSA Dinah Lance and then a contemporary younger Dinah Laurel Lance in the comics who trained with her mom's best friends and her mom's teammates, and that's kind of what made her such a good fighter, is that she was schooled by people like Wildcat and Dr. Midnight and Hourman and those guys. That's where she learned the tricks of the game. So I thought that establishing that there was this generational thing where, you know, Ted was a little bit of the elder statesman, whether it works in the DCAU continuity or not, you might be able to fudge some numbers and make it work. But yeah, just the idea that she trained under him and now loves him like he's one of her uncles. I mean, she, in the comics, she called him Uncle Ted all the time. So,
right. Yeah. I think that goes back at least to Secret Origins number 50, which you know obviously covered, Secret Origins podcast by Alan Brennert, you know, obviously network favorite, and Joe Staton, and like you said, the Green Arrow and Black Canary romance goes all the way back to, I guess, what's now considered Black Canary 2's first appearance in Justice League of America number 75, right? So I mean, so this is the episode steeped in DC lore for sure. Yeah,
there was also, trying to remember, the issue where Dinah Lance died. Was it in a Green Arrow annual?
I don't know.
I think there was during the Mike Grell era, there was a Green Arrow annual, I think, where Dinah died of natural causes. And that might have had a flashback. I don't remember if that was before Secret Origins 50 or not.
Okay. Maybe. It may have. Yeah. I'm not as up on that era of the.
I covered it a long, long time ago. In the before time, the before podcasting time.
Yeah. Hey guys, Chris jumping in here during the editing phase. I realized around this time while I'm editing that I made a big goof earlier in the episode, so I'm dropping it in here because I really don't want to go back and drop it in earlier in the episode, but I had said that Black Canary made her live-action debut in the Birds of Prey TV series, and I was totally wrong, because she made her live-action debut in the Legends of the Superheroes specials in 1979. Those two infamous specials, The Challenge and The Roast. Black Canary is there in a domino mask, looking very much like the Golden Age Black Canary, which is another reason why I'm dropping it in right here. She made her debut there alongside Adam West and Burt Ward and Frank Gorshin, and all those other guys in costumes that inspired Alex Ross for years, and the special that I saw as a kid, but then thought that it was a fever dream for years until I saw a picture of the cast in Comic Scene magazine in the late 80s. So, yeah, that's where Black Canary made her live-action TV debut.
You heard it here, folks. He admitted he was wrong. Ha-ha.
Yeah, thanks, Peanut Gallery.
Electricity is evil.
Okay, now jumping into Electricity is Evil. So, you know, I mean, this is just more of a, that's where it was. The ones I found were, you know, Ollie uses the electric arrow to shock one of the security goons. And then, of course, he uses the stun arrow to, you know, shock himself to near death, you know, to get Wildcat out of his Ponfar rage, you know. So, Did I miss anything?
I think you got it.
Okay. But you know, now that I think about it, this is a lot like a mock time because, you know, if you think about it, because Bones gives Kirk the Mickey,
yeah,
and makes it look like Spock killed Kirk, and that gets him out of his blood fever.
Yeah, but, you know.
Gets him out of the plaque towel, you know. So, and then at the end, he's very elated to see that Jim is alive. And we get, you know, that rare moment where Spock loses his composure, which is wonderful. So, back in the day. Back before we saw Spock, you know, getting it on all the time and stuff like that. Like modern Star Trek. So, what did you guys think of this one overall, Ryan?
I enjoyed the heck out of this one. This is one of my favorite episodes of Unlimited, because it has some of my favorite characters. I always have a spot in my heart Green Arrow a little bit, but also especially Black Canary, and I like Wildcat. Wildcat's one of my favorite old school JSA guys. There's just something lovable about just this old boxer who just leads with his fists, and that's all he knows. A very blue collar Stanley Kowalski type. But yeah, it's. It's a fun episode. I watched this a couple of times, but that was so many years ago. I never even thought about the other themes until watching it again, and I was just like, oh, this is clearly about addiction and about an addict and like all the steps that they have to go through before they can get clean and sober, and the way that the show did it pointedly yet subtly and enough for like a kid who might not understand this isn't going to be confused or drowned out by it. So I thought it was handled really well. Love the voice casting and the actors that they got involved in this episode. Not the best episode, nowhere near the best, but just an old favorite of mine that I really enjoyed.
Yeah. What about you, Cindy?
A solid episode. I will say that when we revisit this, that I like that one better.
Oh, you like the double date one? Or the meta brawl thing. Oh, gotcha.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Grudge match, I think, is the name of that episode. Yeah. Yeah, that is a good one. Yeah, that's a really good one. Yeah.
Oh.
The only time with a very brief cameo by Nightwing because they couldn't use him.
Yeah.
In that episode too. Yeah. I believe that's in that one. Yeah, I think so. But yeah, that is a good one. Yeah, I like this one. The same thing with you, Ryan. If watching it again for this again, the addiction storyline really jumped out at me. That theme same thing as you. I love all these characters. I love this version of Green Arrow. This is my, you know, the Bronze Age Green Arrow's, you know, my Green Arrow, the kind I like the best. And I really like the way they portrayed Black Canary. And even though they took Wildcat down a really pretty dark path, I mean, it didn't seem wrong either. I mean, based on what we know from the comics, that Ted could go down this road, you know. So and you know, Ted definitely had, you know, different times over the years had that kind of has-been. I'm washed up, I'm a has-been, you know, my glory days are behind me. So he's had that portrayal in different storylines over the years. I think there was an old Spectre issue from the late 60s drawn by Neil Adams where he kind of went through that. There was some of that in the 70s All-Star Comics. So it's not too much of a stretch to think, okay, he could get lured into something like this and then spiral down into something this bad. So I didn't think it was like completely out of character. I thought it was really well handled. So fortunately, you know, we get Marina Baccarin returning as Black Canary once more this season, and again in season 3, as Cindy just pointed out. And we've got 6 more episodes with Ken Schreiner's Green Arrow, 3 this season and 3 next. It's kind of unfortunate that I think this is the only episode where Wildcat has a speaking appearance. Now, IMDb says he has a speaking role in Panic in the Sky, but Dennis Farina is uncredited, so somebody else may have, you know, just did the voice for a line or two. So, which I wish we'd seen more Wildcat. I wish we could have found out how he did, you know. Just did Ted go through the, you know, did Jean help him? Did he come back, you know, check in with him? Because, I mean, we assume he did, but I sure hope he did, you know.
Well, I mean, just like in thinking of like the whole Deco style of the the Bruce Timm style and everything like that. Just it, there's this timelessness, but a kind of old-fashioned quality that really, like, I mean, how bad would you have liked just like a 1940s or 30s like set JSA type of cartoon or a series
that could have
featured Wildcat in his prime and the classic Starman and Flash and Adam and those guys?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We didn't see the JSA proper until The Brave and the Bold, and, you know, they,
That's what they need, and they need a new sort of JSA Unlimited.
There you go.
Justice Society Unlimited.
That's right. That's what we need, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, we should probably throw some praise over to Stan Berkowitz, who I don't think gets enough credit for some of the fabulous stories he wrote for the DCAU on Superman, the animated series, the new Batman Adventures, Batman Beyond, Justice League, and, of course, Justice League Unlimited. He's written classics like the Superman episode World's Finest and Justice League's A Better World. I mean, one of the best episodes of any, you know, with the Justice Lords of any DCAU show. And he wrote the series premiere last season. We've got two more episodes from him this season. And also Bob Goodman, who also did wonderful work on all these series, including one of my favorite episodes of the new Batman Adventures, Legends of the Dark Knight. That's the one that's got the Frank Miller Batman, and most importantly for me, the Dick Sprang, Bill Finger Batman, which I absolutely love. And one of my favorite Superman episodes, Nighttime, and that's where Superman dresses up as Batman. That's a great one. So these guys, you know, we talk about Dwayne McDuffie and Paul Dini and guys like that a lot, and of course our friend Rich Fogel, but you know, Stan Berkowitz and Bob Goodman deserve a shout out. So great job on this episode, guys, and thanks for all the work, the stuff you did that entertained the crap out of us. So thank you. one thing I wanted to point out, because when we did feedback last time, our nephew Isamu Yukinori, because we're all his uncles, you know.
You're
his aunt, and me and Ryan and Shag and Rob and everybody, we're all his uncles. But last time Isamu pointed out that the end credits for part one of the Once and Future thing showed Wonder Woman with the heroes in part two, despite the fact that in the aired episode she had disappeared by that scene when they are interrogating the character of Ghoul.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this episode here, The Cat and the Canary, the end credits show scenes from the previous episode, which is part two of the finale, right. Once and Future thing, and then the next episode, The Ties That Bind. And there's a scene where Wonder Woman is dropping down with the other heroes right before they interrogate Ghoul.
Right.
So that makes us think even more that originally Wonder Woman really was
not going to disappear
as soon, or maybe not at all.
Yeah.
So good job, Isamu. We always say this, but yeah, just like your dad, you're always digging these things out that everybody else misses. So that's really cool. So now, Ryan, before we let you beam back down to the surface and, you know, you can ride off on Black Canary's motorcycle and hopefully she'll let... Well, Angie might not want you grabbing around her waist. I don't know. But tell the folks where they can find you on the network and elsewhere.
Right now, you can find me on Cheerscast, where I am hosting... podcasting about my favorite TV show of all time, Cheers, doing it one episode at a time. Right now, we are in season 6, starting in the Rebecca years. Also, from time to time, I host an episode of Fire and Water Records with either my brother or another guest, and we talk about music, just different genres and stuff like that. Got a couple episodes in the hopper with a few different guests that are coming up soon in the next couple months.
Oh, that's great. I love that show. I'm so glad you brought it back. It's the Valentine's episode you and Neil did was just great, and I mean, I've found a lot of songs I hadn't heard before, and I loved your guys' discussion. Every time you guys have one of those shows, I find out more about the Daily Brothers. Yeah, you know, so, some of that stuff I don't know if you guys should be putting out on air, but you know, it's
we reveal too much.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Speaking of Valentine's, I will say this: I put up a poll on our Patreon page, you know, because in lieu of, you know, because Valentine's Day was coming up, in the spirit of Valentine's Day, and because we were going to do this episode, who was your favorite Justice League Unlimited couple.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of interesting.
I know.
Very interesting. So here's, I ended the
and
poll.
And I helped pick the couples. So.
Yeah, she helped pick the couples. Yeah, I asked Cindy about this. So we wanted to limit it. Didn't go too crazy. So here's how the rankings went. And I ended it today as we recorded, a week later after I posted it. So our number one couple was the Huntress and the Question at 37%.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow. You guys like the crazy couple. Okay. They're both knackers, you know? So,
yeah.
Tied for number two, as of this morning when I ended it, is Batman and Wonder Woman and Black Canary and Green Arrow, who both have 20%.
I know.
So, what do you think about that, Ryan?
I did not vote in this poll, but had I voted, I would have voted for the Huntress and the Question.
There you go. Okay. And oddly enough, this really shocked me. In third place, we had Green Lantern and Hawkgirl at 14%. That really shocked me because, I mean, their romance is kind of like one of the foundations of the series.
I know. It
keeps going on, and, you know, it's an ongoing thing throughout the series. So that kind of shocked me. Number five was kind of a wild card I threw in because it's really only one episode, but Brainiac 5 and Supergirl got 9%. Of course, they were a couple in the comics over the years, different versions of that. And then a real shocker, in absolute last place with no votes, Green Lantern and Vixen.
I know.
So nobody's pulling for that couple.
Nobody.
They want to get their Warhawk. They don't want Green Lantern. Sorry, Green Lantern and Vixen getting together. Yeah. So
that was like in The Office when Jim was dating Rashida Jones for that season. It's like, no, you know he doesn't belong with her. Come on.
Right. That's right. It's all the times on Friends when Ross and Rachel weren't together. Like, get over it and get back together. Right. Yeah. Speaking of patrons,
the Huntress and the Question thing is just like, he's so weird. So it's like, oh, she's a freak. If she's into this, then there's something really weird going on here. We want to see it.
Well, the way the Huntress dresses and stuff, you know, it's like there's some kinky stuff going on there.
Oh, baby.
Oh, yeah. She kisses him through that mask. I mean, come on. You know, it's like kissing, like, silly putty or something. You know?
Well, you know, latex all over. Yeah.
Oh, before we go any further down this dark path, this is the not safe for work episode of JLUcast. Speaking of patrons, we should thank our Patreon supporters. For information on how you can support the Firewater Podcast Network and vote in cool polls like this, visit patreon.com/FWPodcast.
Extra special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo, Matt Ryan, Neil Whitney, Jeff Owens of the Classic Horrors Club podcast, David Capoon, and Rocket Dan Johnson, who specifically support JLUcast. You guys are up next to fight Evil Star, Tracer, Amygdala, and Helgemrite.
Yeah, good luck, guys. And there's no Black Canary and Green Arrow to help you now. So, yeah. So, Ryan, thank you so much for stopping by. I mean, we really enjoyed this discussion. I think we had a great discussion on this one. It was a lot of fun. And we look forward to having you back for another episode, maybe next season, later this season, whenever you want to come back. You got the JLA signal device. Just push the button.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks, guys. And we come back next episode. We'll have the episode that features the return, finally, of the Flash. Michael Rosenbaum's Flash finally shows up on Justice League Unlimited with Mr. Miracle and Big Barda in the episode The Ties That Bind.
The Flash that we actually want to see.
Oh, Cindy. We weren't supposed to go there, remember? The Flash you want to see, that you want to see that you don't have to have Michael Keaton in to go see it. There you go.
Okay.
We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
JLUcast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders, and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue Mommy and Daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLUcast and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FW Podcast. Please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to JLUcast.
Most people, after they sold the company for $3 billion, would just kick back and relax.
I'm not most people. Besides, after taxes and the lawyers are through with you, you're lucky if you see $1.5 billion.
My heart bleeds. Black Canary.
Green Arrow. I've noticed you around.
I know. You happy punching the bag, or you want to go a few rounds with me? I am talking about sparring.
That'd be nice, too.